Ho, ho, ho.
What'd you call me?
Say it again.
Yeah, ho, ho, ho.
That's my name.
Everyone, it's our holiday episode of Keep It.
Good tidings.
To all.
To all.
To you and your kin. Is that how the song goes?
I don't... What song is it?
We wish you a Merry Christmas.
Good tidings.
I guess.
Oh,
yeah
probably.
Well, anyway... This is our holiday episode of Keep It. This is, y'all, this is your last episode of the year.
Last of the year. You're maybe home for a break. You're irritated with your family.
Yeah.
They're or driving you crazy.
Have decided to avoid your family.
That too. Maybe you're on a beach somewhere, which is where I will be as
oh,
you
really?
Listen to this. Yes.
Where will you be?
I will be in Mexico.
Oh, that's one of the gooder beaches.
The gooder beaches.
Buenos dias.
CC.
I love my family, and I still spend most of my time at home, like driving around in a car just in my hometown listening to songs I listened to when I was in high school. So it'll be like, you know, came out in 2004. Milkshake.
You cosplay Louis the teenager.
In my like skater wear from the time. Yeah.
I'm going to be here in LA spending Christmas with a friend.
Spooky.
Yeah. Spending Christmas with a close friend of mine. And then I'm going to Buenos Aires for New Year's.
I heard a good, I was talking to someone the other night, and she talked about a Christmas that she spent in LA, and they spent all of Christmas Eve at Wii Spa.
Oh.
And then, like, stayed really late, and then went to sleep, and then got up and had brunch, and I was like, that actually sounds like an incredible Christmas.
Oh my
so,
God.
If you need plans.
I can't wait to do that, actually, because the actual Christmas dinner that I'm going to at my friend's is on Christmas Eve.
Oh, yeah,
so
there you go. So you
the
can
actual
go after.
Day, I'll yeah. just be like...
He just
relaxed.
Go.
And LA, I've been here on Christmas before. LA is empty as fuck.
Is it?
It's
yes.
also, it's shocking how little time it takes to get from any point to any other point. Like, if you want to go to whatever, Arcadia, 6 minutes.
Yeah.
Because it's LA, it's like Clueless. They weren't wrong. Everywhere takes 20 minutes.
Yeah.
They did not account for the million extra people who came.
I might even go have dinner in Venice.
Right. Yeah, that
minutes.
Would be the only, that's actually a PSA to all of my friends. I will drive to Venice for dinner only on Christmas Day. So that's the only time I'm going to Venice.
That's when I take your rooster fish invite.
So later in the episode, I have an interview with Barry Jenkins himself talking about if Beale Street could talk. Guess what? He's done it again. It's perfect. Anyway, this is our holiday mailbag episode. We're doing this again.
Again.
Again. Because you all had so many questions. We just had to do it one more game. Are we ready?
Oh, I guess.
When we're back, holiday questions. Unless they're not holiday questions. And we're back. Let's get into these questions, y'all. Our first one is from Bourgeois Nerd.
Mm. I believe him.
I want that newsletter.
That actually, yeah.
I bet there is one. Be careful what you wish for.
It's Megyn Kelly's new venture.
Yeah.
Once something has been kept, can it ever get taken out, if you will? What would it need to do to be taken out of storage?
What is this, a riddle?
Oh, can we undo
a Are you
keep
the Sphinx?
It?
First of all, when we say keep it to something, it doesn't actually get locked away in a storage like we're in.
Yeah.
Right,
Batman's
it's not,
cave.
Maybe there is an interesting difference here we should make, which is between keeping something and canceling something.
Yeah. We really
just
do typically reserve canceling for like monsters.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would say most of the time things are brought out of storage necessarily because we don't know how to dispose of shit.
Listen, there was a time I might have said keep it to her like years ago when she was doing all of those unnecessary Nicki Minaj collabs, but there was a time I was not an Ariana Grande fan.
Right.
Didn't feel strongly about her. Didn't really care about the music. And look at me now. So
wearing your rabbit ears,
exactly.
And your long
I'm here.
Pony
I got
hair.
My ponytail on. You can't see it. It's as long as I am tall, and I've come back from it. So I feel like you can reverse a keep it.
I mean, I'm sure we've said keep it to Justin Timberlake many a time, and.
And many more to come, sweetie.
Listen, I was out somewhere and I heard Rock Your Body and that song still goes in.
Oh, I was listening to Future Sex Love Sounds And I was like, damn, this album was good. Also, because Timbaland lost his mind.
Thanks,
yeah.
Timbaland. And thanks Pharrell for Rock Your Body.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe the issue on Man in the Woods. Who did Justin Timberlake work with?
Yeah. Not two of the most prolific producers to ever make
music. The Unabomber.
That's right. Yeah. Who else was out there?
And his little wooden shack.
And Leo in The Revenant. That's right.
Yes, of course.
Also, okay, can I say something about Rock Your Body? Okay, the year that song came out, until I was corrected by multiple friends. Okay. When he says, I'm going to have you naked by the end of this song, I thought he said, I'm going to dip your naked body into this sauce. What was the sauce? I don't know.
How did you
I
get,
said it out loud
that
a lot.
So many extra words. I thought you were going to just like, you had naked wrong. That was, you added like five extra words.
What is like a whole new short story?
What is in your brain? I'm going to dip you naked in this sauce? What did you think he said to Janet at the Super Bowl?
Something like that. It's like the follow-up to I'm Loving It. Now he's going into like what you do with the chicken nugget.
I always forget that he wrote that McDonald's jingle.
Yeah.
I'm loving it.
He's like responsible for a cultural moment. He's like secretly Don Draper.
That's the money that bought Jessica Biel's failed restaurant.
Oh, fudge, yeah.
It's gone.
I know. You know, I'm glad to have been on the front lines of real journalism when I reviewed it. I brought my friend Goldie, who was three at the time. She was like three or four. Goldie seemed to enjoy it, but I do remember we ordered a club sandwich with... So the club sandwich, right, is like $20. And then we added caviar on top, which is an option, because we were expensing it. And then it was like a $55 sandwich. Let me tell you, club sandwiches do not need caviar.
I bet they don't. Mm.
Good to know.
Just in case.
With like the bacon and stuff on it too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Actually, they plopped it on top. And so then you had to kind of like scrape it off and add it. It wasn't, all of that to say, not surprised it's gone.
Seems like a poorly put together caviar sandwich too. Like, oh, pay $25 just for us to throw this on the bread.
It was.
Anyway, Yvette, she would like to know, if you had to listen to only one Christmas song for the rest of your life, what would it be?
All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Yeah, right? I feel like that's the answer.
I feel like that has to be.
Also, I feel like we're heading towards that as a society. Like, it's just going to be that song for the rest of time.
The Lambs are going to take out every other song.
Right. Do you think the Lambs will gain in strength as the years go on?
Yeah.
Okay.
Payola.
Right. this is technically, you can argue it's not a Christmas song, but it's in MAME, right? We Need a Little Christmas. I love that song.
Well, Christmas is in the
title. Who sings that song?
We need MAME, a little Christmas right this very minute.
I don't know why thing. I thought you singing it would help me.
Lucille Ball was in it.
Okay. Oh, actually, MAME. I do know about this because... I can't say why, but I do know. I do know why. Sorry. I do know. I do know what MAME is.
Okay.
Is it because you're Lucille Ball's secret great-great-granddaughter?
Yes. Yes, that is why.
Okay.
Cool.
Can I also say, I went down a deep All I Want for Christmas Is You rabbit hole like a week ago and learned that Mariah Carey, the genius, the GOAT, wrote that song with one other person.
Oh, yeah.
Because she often does not get the credit she deserves where she actually writes most of her songs and like her hits. And there was an estimate that she has made. Guess how much money she's made from that song? Just that song.
I mean, because it's like number one every year. I would say it's like $30 million.
Okay, that's a guess. What's your guess?
I think it's maybe like over $3
billion. Close. $60
million. Oh, okay. Yeah.
From that one song.
And it's never going to die.
And it's never going to die. That is how you do it.
Listen, she is the queen. As I was saying with M&EK when we talked on the show, like, she doesn't have anything to prove to these girls Mm-mm. anymore. She had people physically leaving their home to buy albums.
Right.
Right now, people are just like, ugh, I want to listen to, you know, this Camila Cabello song. Let me just stream it from my bathroom.
Right. I had to get my mom to drive me to Target to get that Glitter soundtrack.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that took some work.
I owned Rainbow. That was the first one I bought by her. But I had a cousin, the only person of color I knew my entire life until I was 18. She had all of Mariah Carey's albums, and she taught me to like her.
Where did you live, Whoville?
the suburbs of Chicago are... Poland took over. Let's just say it.
I've heard of them. Yeah. White Flight.
Yes.
Should we move on to another question?
Yes.
This is from Jenny. Jenny says, I am a fan from Nicaragua, and I wanted to ask, what is your favorite show that was ultimately canceled? Mine was Pushing Daisies.
What's up, Nicaragua?
Ooh, oh, goodness. Managua capital? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know a Nicaraguan accent.
I would prefer you didn't.
For the best. Yes. Thank God.
What was yours, Kara?
I don't know if this is a favorite, but this is one in recent memory. There was a show, I think it was on TBS, called Sirens. That was actually like a really good comedy. It was about EMT workers, and it was really funny, and it was like pretty. They were in Chicago, the part with black people. I don't know. It was just like it was one of those just like well-written, enjoyable comedies that I could put on. But it was like TBS, and they're weird, and so it was canceled.
Speaking of TBS, is Angie Tribeca still on? My dad will occasionally call me to say he still watches it.
I think it is. It's not gone.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's alive.
Gotcha. Show for me. I was a Happy Endings person for a while. Enjoyed that show. I had to be convinced for a while because it was in the wake of 30 Rock and I was still mourning that. But it really did pick up the pieces nicely. And I think my favorite one on the show is Casey Wilson. I think she's my favorite.
Happy Endings is fucking great.
Hilarious.
Like, you can literally just throw it on. Right.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And I'm always going to laugh.
They all are so talented.
Yeah. Just bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. They're all hanging out. They all seem like nice people.
What is mine? I mean, I would go with something like Happy Endings, too. But actually, I think it's the one that Jenny picked. I loved Pushing Daisies. Pushing Daisies was a great show.
I actually have to amend mine. It is American Vandal.
Oh, yeah.
Because I cannot believe Netflix canceled it after only 2 seasons. Both seasons were fucking hilarious. That premise, like that, the whole, that show was so smart and funny and good. And I am not happy about it. So that is my pick.
It always is kind of unnerving when there's an entire cast of people you've never seen before and they're all great.
Right. They were so good. And like, it's nice to see them sort of out in the wild now. But yeah, that show was great.
Well, watch season 2 of Insatiable. next question.
Oh, I should pick one? Let's see here. Let's do... Oh, this is from Brandon. Who would play you and your co-hosts in the movie version of Keep It? Oh, God. Can I tell you something? I couldn't think of Andrew Garfield's last name recently, which made me feel like I was beginning my Still Alice decline.
He is allegedly canoodling with Rita Ora.
Oh, I know. So Rita Ora will play you and Andrew. I mean, like, there are so few people on the planet with this like five head situation I've got going on, and he makes it look handsome. So I would go with him.
Okay.
I have a thing. I don't think anyone looks like me. Like, I've never seen an app or just someone where I'm like, oh, I see the resemblance.
Ooh,
other
girl,
than like
you
my
look like Whoopi Goldberg. Right.
Other than like my family, so I don't even. So there's that. I don't know who I would get to play me.
Mm-hmm. Even in spirit?
Yeah, I'm trying to think in spirit.
Kiki Palmer. That's the guy.
She could... I
gotta
say,
I've spent some time with Kiki Palmer, and she is energetic. She's very sweet, but had like a ton of energy, which I don't know if that's my particular vibe. But she's a good actor, so maybe she could pull it off.
Listen, she has been living off the wall since Michael died.
Right. Fucking monster over here.
Who's playing Ira?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're waiting for me to pick. You should. The face you just made at me was like, he has his hand on his, on. He has his chin on his hand, like he's Jane Mansfield, like posing in a portrait. Who would I pick for Ira? I'm sure there's like an obvious answer to this. Kara, you coming up with anything over there?
I'm not good at these. Ira, do you have someone in mind?
I don't know. For me, it feels weird. Can I play myself?
I guess you have to.
I'm an actor.
That's
I have
right.
a degree that
you
says
took a
so.
Movement class. Yeah,
I did. Yeah, Stanislavski.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
That's not the one where you pretend the orange juice is there. No, Stanislavski is just like, I believe I am here.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. The other one is, I don't know, Sturm und Drang.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. I know words. I know theater words. Whatever.
Okay.
I'm playing myself.
Okay. That's settled.
We're moving on.
Moving on.
That was a weird question. I guess it wasn't a weird question. We just can't answer it.
This is from Lou. For Ira, do you keep up monthly with any comic books? And if so, what is your favorite current title? I'm sorry I read this question. I didn't mean to enable it, but go ahead.
Wow. First of all, I still read Spider-Man, the Miles Morales version. And I've also been reading Wonder Woman. I know, I've fallen off on comics lately. There are some really new, interesting titles coming out from Vertigo that I really want to get into, like American Carnage. That one looks very interesting, and it deals with race in America. So other than that, I need to get back into comics. How about y'all tweet at me comics that I should be reading?
How about it?
I fell off. I've been busy. I've been trying to... I don't know, I guess I haven't been reading books.
I haven't been reading books. Well, should we do the next book question?
Yes.
So Anne asked, what was Kara's favorite book she read in 2018? And what's one book you all would recommend to understand the current moment? And damn, Anne, that is three questions. And what's Lewis's favorite Karen Carpenter song?
How nice of her.
I gotta say the book that I enjoyed the most was The Truth About Animals, which I talked about like incessantly, but it was just like the world is crazy. I cannot believe there are this many animals. I cannot believe all of this stuff is happening. They do all these things. It was so like, it's just like my mind was blown. I can't believe that the world exists and all of these things are in it. And that was like a crazy entertaining read. A book, right now I'm reading a book called The Death of Truth, which is real depressing. And it's on like it's sort of like the attack on reason and truth in the age of Trump. And it goes through just like this whole, it goes through this whole history of like postmodernism and how we just sort of got into this bullshit where everything was kind of subjective and because language could be subjective and all of this shit. And that's how you end up with someone like Trump who can just say words that don't mean what they mean and says that they mean what they mean. And it goes through like Hitler and other fascists and things like that. So it is light in that it is a small book. It is like pocket, you know, it's a... one you can
tote
around.
I love digestible terror.
Yeah, but it is like a pretty intense read, but I think it is very necessary considering what we're dealing with right now.
So. My favorite Carpenter song is probably, I know you all were waiting on the edge of your seats, Yesterday Once More, but I would also, like the classics, We've Only Just Begun, Superstar, it's at Rainy Days and Mondays, but Yesterday Once More, I love a song about nostalgia.
Touch Me When We're Dancing.
Oh, I know you love that song. That's your favorite album by then.
It is.
Made in America.
Listen, I do like the Carpenters. That's the surprise twist.
I know, right.
I've liked them all year.
Whenever people ask me about this podcast, I'm always like, guys, secretly, Ira knows all the shit I do. He just laughs at me for talking about it.
That's called bullying.
Speaking of bullies.
Actually, by the way, I did remember, you should read West Coast Avengers and Hawkeye by Kelly Thompson. Because she's a great writer. Anyway, that's it. Let's get back to bullying.
To bullying. This is from Caroline. If you could pick anyone to be president right now, regardless of age, electability, etc., who would you choose? Because our president is a bully. That's why I thought.
Oh,
bullying.
I see.
Yes.
Oh.
Look, I mean, like, keeping it basic, Liz Warren. Sorry, she's routinely right. I mean, I can think of a couple of times where I was angry. The whole DNA test, that was a little unnerving. Otherwise, she's like super heroic to me most of the time. And when she holds people to task, it's so good television. I just want to keep watching it.
Okay. Stacey Abrams, please. There was something, this was a great Nate Silver who, I like Nate Silver, but he also, there are moments where he tests my patience, but he was talking about Beto and people, you know, talking about now him running for president. And he's like, I just don't understand why no one's having these conversations about Stacey Abrams and Andrew Gillum. I'm like, sir, you know why. Don't with this bullshit. Like, I just don't understand why no one's asking it. You know why? It's because they're black, Nate Silver. That is why no one is having these conversations. And he knows that. He's not a dummy. Mm-hmm. So I did not appreciate that tweet, but he is right.
Because they watch Martin reruns on BET.
And so, yes, Stacey Abrams is who I want to be my next president because she would, like, go in there and actually do work because, like, black women actually go in and, like, have to finish shit and have to do shit. And she would be like, let's actually work. Let's, like, actually solve some problems here.
She's like fireworks the person. Just please more of her in any capacity.
Yeah. Who's your president?
Joe Kennedy. He's so cute.
Oh, the tiny kid.
He's cute.
Okay.
You're going like the full Trudeau route. You just believe cuteness leads to greatness. He's a Sometimes ginger. It's true.
He gave a really good speech a couple times. I retweeted it.
But is he the cutest president we could have? If you're going off of that.
I am not one of those people who's like, oh my God, Beto. I don't find him that cute.
I'm still
recovering from that Twitter thread about that woman talking about having sex with him.
Oof.
Excuse me.
Wanting to have sex with him.
Somebody messaged me to say that they had found a slash fic about Beto and Tommy Vitor. So I don't.
Oh, God!
So I don't know.
Does Tommy know about that?
He will when he hears it.
It's been wearing on me for a couple of weeks now, and now I've said it. So
wow,
anyway.
That was a bomb drop.
Wow.
Stay tuned.
Wow.
Oh, goodness.
Creepy. They're both nice people.
Actually, you know what? I don't know.
Do you find Gavin Newsom attractive?
I love Gavin Newsom. Okay. I find him very attractive. You know what? I'd be fine with Gavin Newsom being president.
Okay.
Because, I don't know. It would I feel like it would continue the Trump,
right.
Kimberly Guilfoyle drama. Yeah. I don't need that.
Dynasty.
Yes.
Can Joan Collins be president?
Oh, that she's only like 85.
This was literally whoever you want to be president.
I own 51% of the White House.
It's a good TV show.
Okay. What are we watching?
Let's
see. I could have picked Willy Wonka.
You could have.
All right. Here's one from Emma. What popular Christmas or holiday movie needs to be kept?
Holiday movie. Oh, God. Well, I mean, the Love Actually debate burns every year, and there's good and ridiculous parts of that movie. I can't get over that Keira Knightley was like 17 or whatever when she made that movie. Otherwise, you know what? I'm sorry. Home Alone is too motherfucking violent. I cannot stand to watch it. Do you know what is the best part of that movie? When Kevin goes to the store. I'm like, what a little badass.
I liked Home Alone 2 because I liked the idea of just being in a hotel and eating room service. And like, that's how I would want to be home alone.
Okay, Eloise.
Exactly.
I feel like I'd say keep it to Home Alone 2 if only because Donald Trump is in it.
That's true. Also, they waste two Oscar winners in that movie because you got Joe Pesci. Then you got Brenda Fricker as the pigeon lady. That's her most prominent role after her Oscar-winning turn in My Left Foot. Should I look into the camera and plead for sanity in this universe? It's very crazy.
The sexism in Hollywood.
Quite.
Daniel Day-Lewis, after My Left Foot, didn't have to play Pigeon Man.
No. No, he would have been paid $30 million to play Pigeon Man in an Old West.
I feel like I don't know that many holiday movies. Like nothing's. I do remember watching a holiday movie once with Chris Brown. That I don't remember enjoying. Oh, actually, The Best Man 2. No, wait, I liked that one. That's not what we're doing.
The
we're
Best
doing
Man Holiday.
The Best Man Holiday, which I quite enjoyed.
Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life.
You don't like it.
I hate it.
Mm.
It's boring.
Yeah.
I like the women in it, but no, it's boring.
You like women in everything.
I do have a problem, yes.
I mean, wait, this was the one... Wait,
I feel
isn't
like you
this
like the
the
women.
Isn't that, It's a Wonderful Life like the blueprint remake. For all holiday movies? Like, is this when he goes and,
yes.
and he's seen...
the ghosts.
Yeah,
and
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But along that's from, like, A Christmas Carol.
I know, but it was, like, the best, you know, reinvention of that, probably.
There is an amazing tweet. I wish I knew. It's a woman who wrote it, but she says, It's a Wonderful Life is about how rich people have to be supernaturally terrorized into being generous.
Basically.
Very funny. Very funny.
All right. I think we've got time for one more question.
All right.
It's got to be hot. It's got to be spicy.
Mm.
It has to be something a little sexual.
Okay. These are too many ingredients.
I want to be seduced. I mean, this isn't going to be our last question because Matthew wants to know who the biggest all-time Oscar snub is, and it's clearly Angela Bassett and What's Love Got to Do with It. Moving on.
Oh, all right. Do I agree with that? I mean, it's up there.
Yeah. You know you agree.
Oh, out of fear? Okay.
So we're nearing the end of this, guys. We got one more question.
Oh, okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm,
this is from Colin. What are your thoughts about New Year's resolutions, and what are yours?
I'm always pledging to do shit all the time due to being a progressive, active, living my own life type of person. That said, I'm not hateful about New Year's resolutions.
So you make New Year's resolutions every day of your life.
That's right. Every day is a new year for me because I'm losing my mind. I don't know. I honestly could stand to read a lot more. Do you know what I could stand to do more? Watch more television shows. I just like movies because they're short and then you're done with them. And I'm daunted by TV. And there's so much I haven't seen that I have pretended to see. But
what
I'm also...
What's your biggest TV lie that you feel most... You know, like the worst one that you said that you watched that you haven't watched?
I've watched two episodes of Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and I wish I had seen.
That's the biggest one that you're concerned about?
Oh, I've never seen Game of Thrones. I've never seen... I did actually watch... Like, Mad Men was the last show I watched all of. So anything in between...
Anything after that?
I'm fucked.
Well, damn.
Mm-hmm.
I love a New Year's resolution. Dude. You know, I just love marching into the New Year's boardroom, throwing it all on the table.
Mm-hmm. So you make one every year?
I'm thinking about Dynasty again.
Okay.
Sorry. It's all I do.
I was also going to say, what is a New Year's boardroom?
2019's office. I've got some things to say.
Okay.
I don't like a New Year's resolution. I like a New Year's mood. So I like going into the new year with a general... Like, whose mood are we trying to do this year? Is this a Mariah Carey year?
Mm.
Is this going to be a Michelle Obama year? Am I going to try to do a lot of work? Am I going to do, like, a Cassie year where I maybe just try to find a man to spend all of his money on me? Just,
sure.
Like, you know, it. I you have to
Simple
go
Simple virtues.
Yes, just like a general mood into the year, less than a resolution.
I want an Eve year.
Listen.
Just like a castle in Europe somewhere, drinking champagne and... taking care of some white man's kids.
Listen, she's pregnant now, too.
Is she?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Is she still on the talk?
She sewed it up.
No, I don't know. Is she still on the talk?
You can never know who's on the talk at any given moment. It's
illegal
knowledge.
I don't know why she'd be on the talk. She's married to, like, a very, very rich white man. She doesn't need to be doing the talk.
I think she got a little bored. That's why she went on tour with Gwen Stefani. It was great.
Recently?
Like, 2 years ago.
Oh. Well, that would have been
Eve is a
tour.
Good mood for the year. So we all have to find rich white husbands.
I also feel like she has looked the same ever since she has been famous, which is definitely the 90s.
Louis, you know what a television show you missed? Eve's sitcom.
Which was?
It was on like
UPN. On UPN.
Oh. Oh, I kind of remember that.
She owned a boutique.
Oh, sure. Yes. Yeah.
Hold on. But my favorite part of that sitcom was that it was called Eve. And... I don't believe the name of her character was named Eve. It starred her as...
Well, on Seinfeld, his name isn't... Oh, no, wait, never mind, it is.
Yes. She played Shelley Williams. But the show is called Eve.
That is baffling.
That's actually pretty incredible. Going with that mood into 2019, just like... Do whatever fuck you want.
That is our resolution.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas featuring Eve. Is that what you say on Christmas Eve? It is what I say now. You know, like Gwen Stefani, Merry Christmas featuring Eve.
Okay.
I think that is the perfect note to go out on this year, Louis.
You know what? I'm not sorry. I'm glad.
Guys, I cannot believe you stuck with us all year.
Woof. What's your problem?
God bless.
Bless you all. Everyone. When we're back, I talked to Barry Jenkins about his new film, If Beale Street Could Talk. I'm sitting down now with Academy Award-winning writer and director Barry Jenkins' first film since Moonlight won the Best Picture. It's If Beale Street Could Talk, his adaptation of James Baldwin's novel, the first English language film based on the work of the author to whom the movie is dedicated. Set in early 1970s Harlem, If Beale Street Could Talk is a timeless and moving love story of both a couple's unbreakable bond and the African-American family's empowering embrace as told through the eyes of 19-year-old Tish Rivers. Hi, Barry.
Hey, what's up, Art?
You are back with your next film. And after everything with Moonlight and the
Oscars and, you know, that just being such a whirlwind. How are you feeling with If Beale Street Could Talk?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm feeling good now. You know, we started showing the movie, so people are watching it. You know, I mean, anytime you make something, anytime I make something, I'm always nervous as hell of what people are going to think of it. And with this one, you know, because of how loud the last one was, especially the ending of the Oscars and all that stuff, I just knew there were a lot of eyeballs on this. And it's James Baldwin, too. So, you know, pressure on top of pressure on top of pressure. But, yeah, I'm feeling good, man. You know, it's November. I see all these I voted stickers. You know, it feels like things are changing. So, yeah, I feel good.
Yeah, listen, the movie is great.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
I'm like turning into a stan now. I love Moonlight.
So Beale Street's like the good kind of keep it, right?
Yes.
Like keep it as in we want
it's
this.
The opposite of keep it. It's okay. Like I'll take it.
Okay.
Yes. We're not saying keep it to Beale Street. First of all, it just wrecked me.
I'm sorry, bro.
Thank you.
I apologize.
Twice you've done this. I'm sitting in the theater just like crying, and also it just looks beautiful. It is so bright and colorful, and it's nice to see like black people so brightly lit and dressed so nicely.
Yeah, you know, part
and
of
in
that,
a period piece
and a period piece. You know, part of that was, you know, when you read the book, I think Mr. Baldwin's words were very bright. You know, or I've been saying the word lush. You know, everything about this book is very lush. You know, the depictions of passion, of romance, of family, just everything is painted with such a lush, I would say saturated kind of brush. And so for myself and James Laxton, the cinematographer, the path was already set. You know, we were going to make a very lush, saturated, beautiful film.
So speaking of Baldwin, maybe you can give us some insight into why we don't see so many Baldwin adaptations. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had 50 Great Gatsbys.
Yeah, but who was Gatsby? You know, Gatsby's a white man.
Yes, and that's true.
And I think there's actually an article in the LA Times that either has come out or is coming out soon, just about the dearth of black literary adaptations. You know, there just haven't been a lot of them. You know, whether it's Toni Morrison, James Baldwin, Zora Neale Hurston, whoever, and they just haven't been adapted at the rate that their white peers have been adapted, and that's changing now. You know, if you look at this year, I think there's like four features, you know, made by black people, featuring black people that are adaptations of black authors. So I think the time is just caught up to Mr. Baldwin.
And it's great, particularly just because, you know, there was around the 12 Years a Slave era before Moonlight hit, you know, people were just like, can we see a black movie that's not about slavery anymore? And especially with period pieces, it was like, can we also see something that doesn't have to be Hidden Figures or, you know, whatever movie Chadwick Boseman's in, which is usually
historical. You know what the funny thing about that is, though? I mean, before 12 Years a Slave, there was, like, I guess, Amistad and Roots.
Yes.
There's been, like, 8,000 movies, you know,
it
about
It feels
slavery.
Like there's been 900. It feels like I've seen one every day.
Well, I think only because that one is so damn good.
True.
That it just gets inside your consciousness. But no, I think the day when we can go, oh, I'm so sick of those lush period romance James Baldwin adaptations, that
Never.
Would be a damn good day, you know?
Why was this your first, choice to pick a Baldwin book?
No. If I had my choice, I would have chosen Giovanni's Room, for sure. You know, it's my favorite James Baldwin novel. It's so short and sweet and just full of passion, just
would
shot through with passion.
Would you keep the characters white?
I would. Okay. I think I would honor the text the same way I honored this text,
okay.
If working from that material. But
I love that book.
It's amazing.
I had thoughts when I read it.
Well, I mean, but it was written in like,
true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
I know.
Context is everything.
Yeah.
But even with, just like with this adaptation, I would want to bring it into the world intact. And so everything about this book has a fidelity to the source material or this film. And I think if I had done Giovanni's Room, it would be the same. But what struck me about Beale Street was, you know, Baldwin had so many voices, but there were two most prominent. You know, one was this very lush sensualism, obsessed with romance, you know, whether that be between a man and a woman or a man and a man, or even in this book, on the side pocket, there's a lesbian romance, too, that's sort of very, very subtle. And then the other voice was this very piercing social critique, you know, speaking quite frankly and honestly about the role of American society and American government in the lives of black folks. And in Beale Street, I think those two voices are fused just so fluidly and organically in the story of Tish and Fonny, who are soulmates, that I just felt like this one was a challenge that scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
But I thought also, too, if we succeeded, it would be the one that would be the most potent and the most powerful, coming out of my voice, at least.
You know, it's around the holidays now, and speaking of family, you had me hooked immediately from just the family scene. I thought the dynamics, the casting, everything that was going on in those scenes, like it felt like I mean, sitting in the living room with my
Coleman
family.
Calls it the blackest scene ever put to
screen.
I mean, you know, and for me, I took my hat to Mr. Baldwin. You know, that scene is broken up over a few different chapters in the book, and it felt like it would be just a nice introduction to really set up the circumstances of Tish and Fonny's situation. You know, this is the case, this is the family, the families are fucking crazy and so different. And you kind of wonder, you know, how are these two people going to make it? And what I love is that, you know, I'm using Coleman's words now. He's like, you see, you sit in the living room and you see every kind of black person you have ever known in your family.
Grandmother, exactly. Aunties,
exactly.
Cousins who only come over for food on Thanksgiving.
And what I love about it is, you know, because Mr. Baldwin was writing from the source, there's so much. If you watch this movie with a certain audience, they're going to pick up on every single little thing. Other audiences won't catch everything. That's totally fine. Totally fine. But certain audiences will pick up on every single thing in that nuance, that detail. That's the kind of thing that I fell in love with when I first read the novel.
And you wrote this script at the same time as the Moonlight one.
I did, yeah. It was the summer of 2013. I was very lonely, very hungry, and so I went to Europe trying to emulate Mr. Baldwin.
That's me every day.
There you go. Very, very hungry, very lonely. And yeah, and I wrote these two screenplays.
That in Europe?
Now, yeah, yeah. I wrote Moonlight in Brussels, and I wrote Beale Street in Berlin.
Get the fuck out of here. That is
so lush. I will not get the
that
fuck out of here. And you can't tell me to keep it, bro, because the movies exist.
I need to do that. I am on my way from here to Paris.
Congrats.
And London and Barcelona.
For chill or for work?
For vacation.
Okay, nice, man. I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I just got back from those places, but I was working. No thanks to you, my dear. I'm staring at my publicist right now.
Yeah, because I remember you tweeted something about being in like a cafe in Paris. I was like, is he on vacation with a movie to promote?
I was spreading the Baldwin gospel, man. And it was amazing. We had a screening in Paris, and afterwards these four black women came up to me from different countries on the continent of Africa. But, you know, they weren't talking about the story or the narrative or the plot. They were talking about Kiki and Tiana and Regina and just the idea of seeing these black women, you know, with all these different skin tones and showing so many different kinds of strength. And it's one of those things that I didn't realize in making the film or casting it, just how much, again, some of these nuances, these details would mean to certain audiences.
Yeah, the depictions of black women in this film are great. You get so many varying ones, even going back to Moonlight with Naomi Harris's too. And the later half of the movie, when it's like Regina's story, is fantastic.
Yes.
The green coat.
Yes.
The green coat was like, was giving me vertigo. It was I love just that image. And I could talk about that all day. Going back to like your Oscar story, you know, Damien has another movie out this year.
I do,
but I don't think people are gonna be like First Man versus Beale Street the way that they were with La La Land. At least I promise not to be crazy this year.
Okay, well, you know, I'll accept that. I'll accept that plea or that promise on both my half and Damien's behalf. You know, even back then, it felt like if Damien made Moonlight and I made Moonlight, then I could see this sort of duality or this competition, so to speak. Or if he made La La Land and I made La La Land, you know, La La Land in the hood or something, then I could see it. But it's just they're two different, completely different pieces of art, the same as these two are completely different pieces of art. So it's always a weird thing. Now, being honest, because of what happened, I totally get it. You know, and so when I walk into an interview, you know, I'm not surprised to hear someone bring up, you know, Damien, just as I'm sure I get brought up when he's doing an interview. You know, it was a very public.
You know, I thought they all hated me. But Jordan Horowitz came on the show.
He came on this show?
He came on the show, yes.
You know, that doesn't surprise me. That does not surprise
me. We're friends online now, too.
That does not surprise me. He's a real solid dude. He's actually the first person I saw after the Oscars. It was like 3 months later. We just ended up at this dinner together. And both of us were surprised to see each other. And we just sat across from each other and just like talked the whole thing out. It was all love, real good vibes.
Yeah, you know, and I could also see, you know, why people were just sort of feeling that way. It was so much Oscar so white. It was like everyone was just really into, oh my God, Moonlight.
Yeah, it was it was in the air. And I think what I learned about that is, you know, all you can do is create a piece of work and you have an audience in mind. And to me, that audience on Moonlight was Terrell McCraney. In this film, it was the James Baldwin estate. But then once the film's
Terrell, who I am friends with and cannot get on my damn show.
Well, Terrell's a busy
He is very busy.
It is so hard
to even get him for dinner.
People think I'm busy. He is a busy ass man and very talented. But yeah, it's just one of those things where you make a piece and you put it out into the world and you can't control where it goes from there.
Yeah.
And so the narrative that the film got caught up in, mm-hmm. I guess people needed it. You know, there was so much going on at that time, the same way there's so much going on at this time right now.
So this is also your second collaboration with Joy McMillan.
Yes, yes, it is. I mean, technically, but I mean, I've known Joy since I was like 20 years old. Like, I was her cinematographer in film school. She was my production designer. We've done some shorts together before doing Moonlight. So, but yeah, second official collaboration with Joy in that.
Well, 2 years ago, became the first Black woman ever nominated for Best Editing,
Which is beautiful and sad at the same time because there have been Black women cutting movies that have been worthy of Oscars, you know, way before Joy and I were born. So, you know, that's all I'll say about that.
And just how important it is to collaborate with, you know, Black people when working on Black films?
It's really important, man, especially with this film. You know, when I talk about the process of making Gil Street that I learned the most from was, as a director, you know, you have to have a certain amount of ego. You know, there are all these choices that have to be made and all these people who working independently who need to look to a unified source so that we can all be on the same page. So you have to bring your ego to a certain degree. But in this film, you know, it's a story told from a woman's perspective, from a Black woman's perspective, and it's written by, you know, a gay Black man. Mm-hmm. I'm not a woman. I'm not a Black woman. So I had to really check myself and listen to all the Black women around me, both in the cast, but also especially in post, listening to Joy, because there were certain scenes that I was like, I don't know. I'm not really feeling this scene. And Joy would be like, trust me, you know, people are going to feel this scene, you know. And what she was saying in a very kind way was, there are things that go past your experience that other people are going to see in these characters. And she was right. She was absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. I did notice that, you know, last year in Moonlight, a lot of people were like, why did this movie end too early?
Mm-hmm.
Here, we get to see some sex scenes.
No, but we still cut away from it.
That's true.
We still cut away from it.
We do, but it is like electric.
It is electric, and I will say again, I'll tip my hat to the women surrounding me. That scene, as a director, as an auteur or something like that, is one shot. The whole thing is one shot. He gets up and goes to the record player, and the focus stays with her. You don't see him. He's just like a blob. He drops the needle. You don't see the needle. He comes back, and then they go down to the bed the way it is in the current film. I showed that to a few of my female friends who were directors, you know, a few of them Black women and a few of them Asian women, and they all collectively said, this is great. I know you're trying to tell the story from the female point of view, and so you're staying with her. But if that was a woman at the record player, you would be objectifying her right now. So you need to objectify him. And so we cut to Stefan with all his muscles and his tidy whities and whatnot. He drops the needle. Yes, you're nodding your head. And then we go back to the bed. And it was, again, this place where I had to really sort of listen to all the women and be like, oh, I don't know what this experience is like. Please help me. And every time I asked, I was helped in a really lovely way.
Mm-hmm. You've told just such wildly sort of different but connected sort of stories with your past three films now. And so, I don't know, what do you want to do next?
I mean, I know what I'm doing next. I'm doing The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead right now.
That, television.
Yes, that's a television. But to me, television, cinema, it's all the same thing.
Well, you worked on Dear White People.
I did an episode of Dear White People that I'm really, really fond of. And shout out to Justin Simeon for giving me that opportunity. That was before Moonlight came out. So Justin Simeon gave me my break in television, I'll say, and taught me so much about.
He's been in here, too.
Not surprised. Yeah. Have you been on his show?
I have not been.
His show's dope. I think they kind of cross over a little bit, just a little bit.
Yeah,
just a little bit.
He got my number.
And they're like equals amounts of shade being doled out on these two shows. But yeah, I'm doing The Underground Railroad at Amazon, Colson Whitehead adaptation. And then after that.
I fucking love that book.
It's dense.
Yeah.
It's dense and intense, man.
Took me a minute.
Yeah, and it's taken us a minute to make it, you know, because it's got to be, I think, 10 hours. You know, you can't do that as a feature film. You know, you got to give Cora all the space she needs to go on the journey that she demands.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad that you love, you know, working in the field of TV as much as film.
Yeah, I think right now it's an awesome time to be a storyteller because you don't have to take the material and fit it into a certain format. You take the material and it dictates which format is best for it. And with this book, you know, it wasn't going to be a 2.5-hour movie. you know, that opens at the ArcLight. You know, it's going to be, you know, a 10-hour movie of varying shapes and sizes, the episodes and things like that. And I'm just like, I'm watching Homecoming right now on Amazon, and it's fucking awesome. And you just can't do that anywhere else.
No idea what's going on, but I love it.
Exactly. I'm like 3.5 episodes in, and I'm like, yeah, what is going on? I don't know, but
Julia
I'm here
Roberts
for it.
Julia Roberts running around, and talking on telephones, solving conspiracies.
And then Stephon James, just doing Stephon James.
You know,
just being his gorgeous, handsome, you know, somewhat opaque in this one self. You know, yeah. I don't know what he's up to, but I like it.
Yeah, you should work with Julia.
You know, she introduced a screening of Moonlight, man. She's dope, man. She's fam. Yeah.
Yeah. She loves black people. She would do something. She loves Denzel.
Ira
do
said that.
With her
Ira
Denzel.
Said that, not Barry Jenkins. Just let the record show. Ira said that, not Barry Jenkins. I'm sure she does love black people. Yes.
She loves Denzel.
Yes.
I remember when at that Oscars performance.
When
Denzel.
I met her, I felt love.
Yeah.
You know, I saw her with Stefan. He felt love. So yes. You can say that. But Ira Madison said, Julia Roberts loves black people.
I'm putting it out there. Julia, if you don't agree, you can correct me. But I don't think she will. Do like a Pelican Brief TV show. I don't know. I'm just telling you to do
it. No. You know, with her, I want cinema. Because I'm sure you saw that story about me getting drunk on a plane and tweeting about Notting Hill. And so there's something about... everybody knows. I'm a big Julia fan. So, someday.
Who doesn't love getting drunk on a plane and live tweeting a movie?
You know, see, what happened was, it was a long flight back from Europe. I had been waiting for 3 hours in at Charles de Gaulle, then the flight to JFK. Then I missed the plane at JFK, and so then I had a drink or two, and then I got on the plane at JFK, and it was, like, stormy, and so I just started drinking, and there was Notting Hill. And the whole thing just, it kind of, you know, something happens, you don't understand it's happening until after it's already halfway happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just happened to log on Twitter and realize, like, oh, shit, people are following what I'm tweeting, and it just didn't occur to me.
Yeah.
It just didn't occur to me, bro. I was terrified, man. I thought that was going to be, like, bad. But it was really, I was like... You know, people know that I'm drunk and I'm on like a plane and I'm tweeting about this damn movie. And I'm like, I don't know. I just didn't. One, I was drunk. So obviously, I was like, what the hell is happening?
90% of my tweets are when I'm drunk.
Again, Ira Madison said 90% of his tweets are drunk. Yes. I'm just sitting here very sober, just having a conversation.
All right. Well, I want to thank you.
Nice t-shirt, bro.
Thank you. I make my own comic book shirts.
Really?
Yeah.
I make sweatshirts for people I admire.
Do you knit them?
No. I just have this website called Uber Prints where
okay.
I go on. I made one for Liz Hanna recently, the woman who wrote the post. She's dope.
Yeah.
There was this kid who did his last name's Ma. He skated to Lil Jon. Turned down for what?
Yeah.
Jimmy Ma. So I made some Jimmy Ma sweatshirts. Maybe
okay.
I'll make a Keep It sweatshirt.
That's I would love that.
I'll make a sweatshirt with you, bro.
Okay.
Done. Paula, hold me to it.
All right. Well, thank you for coming. Now I'm even more excited. I got
thank
swag.
Thank you for having me. Can we sing the Save America intro out? You guys should adopt that, but like remix it, like chop and screw it.
Our theme song is better. All right. Thank you for coming, Barry.
Thank you, Mr. Madison.
Coming up next, a holiday edition of Keep It. And we're back. All right. One last Keep It to rule them all. It's like that ring.
The Lord's one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jesus's.
Got it.
Kara, what's your Keep It?
My Keep It is to New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking hate New Year's Eve.
Oh my God.
I hate it. Here's the thing. When I lived in New York, New Year's Eve was amateur hour. Because you know what I was doing when I was in New York? I was going out 4 to 5 times a week. We were all borderline alcoholics. Mm-hmm. We knew how to hold our alcohol. We knew how to keep it together. New Year's Eve, anywhere you go, is amateur hour. It's just the people that never go out, who never do anything, and they're like, tonight, I'm going to take 5 tequila shots. And they're falling on you, and they just get in the way, and they don't know how to act. I do not like New Year's Eve attire. Sequins are tacky.
Mm-hmm.
I do not like the glitter eyeshadow that women have been convinced that they have to wear for this one evening. for some reason, it is impossible to find a ride home. I can think of so many bullshit New Year's that I've had where I also like don't try to make a big deal out of it because you are bound to be disappointed. Like everyone, you know, you have to build up this whole thing or you're paying all this money. And like it's going to be disappointing any night that you put that much pressure on just because it's the end of the year. So I do not like New Year's Eve. I like to stay close to home. Guys, there's a lot of drunk drivers out there. It is dangerous. I like to just have some champagne, maybe eat a lobster tail and chill and wear something warm and comfortable and not like bullshit sequin mini dresses.
You know, Kara also does not like green eggs and ham.
I was going to add also, it is hilarious that there's like this holiday that's just a build up to the worst month of the year. I'm just January where nothing has ever happened.
The Golden Globes.
I celebrate that, but they could, sometimes that
falls
with it.
Do you like enjoy, this is the other thing. I don't believe people, I think we've all been conditioned to think that this is special. I don't think anyone like really enjoys New Year's Eve. Oh, and the other thing is if you go out, like if you're on the East Coast or you're somewhere where the bars are open late, you have to go out so early because when you're in New York, you don't go out till midnight. So in this scenario, you have to go out at like 10 or something. And then it's like, there's still 5 more hours left of this evening because you're not going to go home at midnight and you know everything's going to be open for more for so much longer. So I just it throws everything off.
I'm usually
like
thinking about a man all night.
P.S.
Right, you got to find someone to kiss.
And by the way, if you hook up on New Year's, it is gross. I'm just sorry where the night ends because the night always ends way too late and who with? I regret a lot of things.
A lot of regrets on New Year's Eve.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know you regretted that, Louis.
Say what? Oh, moving right along.
Wow, I thought it was special.
Okay, I need to leave through the roof. Mm-hmm. Where's the chimney? I'm jumping.
Louis, what is your keep it?
I assume a lot of people will be springing their new recipes on me this holiday season. And I have one I would specifically like to say keep it to. It's courtesy of my favorite cooks at the New York Times. They had this headline recently. Surprise your guests with this simple and unexpected appetizer. Charred tangerines on toast.
What?
What?
It is a food that witches serve you. Charred tangerines on toast, Kara. It is a disturbing...
Can I see what it looks like? Do you have a picture?
Yeah, I mean, I can drag it
up. Is it like a piece of bread?
Yes, it looks... Well, it looks like an appetizer.
What the fuck is this?
It looks like cockroaches.
Ooh, and there's, what is that, olive oil?
No guess.
I think it's just the tangerine juice.
It's witch hazel.
Why would the tangerines go with the crusty bread? That's weird. I don't like that.
If you're, guys, we're not trying to, like, improve on bruschetta, are we? I don't think so. So, anyway, let's just keep tangerines in their, like, juicy citrus state. This is my wild revolutionary idea. And not plomp them down on, like, petrified bread. I'd appreciate that. So, anyway, don't try your new recipes out on me. Please just feed me a simple candy cane. I will bring my favorite thing to bring to holiday parties, which is my wit and nothing else because I can't cook.
All you need is like a warmed up wheel of brie.
Yeah.
That's all anyone needs and some bread.
You know what I don't like though? Mulled wine. I feel like that is just food that makes you sick.
I don't really like mulled wine either. I don't mind a punch, a warm sort of whiskey-based punch with some cider.
Yeah.
That I get, but mulled wine is kind of gross.
It's like a wine that's also stew. No way.
You know what my keep is, too?
What?
Jesus!
Oh, sure.
Okay.
It's not your birthday.
Right. He just decided his birthday was any old day.
Just been scamming. Yeah. Nobody actually knows when his birthday is.
I don't think this was Jesus' decision, I gotta say. I don't think Jesus is the one who sent a message hundreds of years forward and said, celebrate my birthday on December 25th.
Oh, I see. You think Jesus doesn't run his own career. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You think he's not doing that Twitter account? You think it's an intern?
I think it might be.
Wow. Keep it to Jesus' Twitter account. Who's running it? It's probably whoever runs
God's Twitter account.
I'm going to say Catherine McPhee's, yes.
Oh, that went a different direction.
It's not his birthday.
It's not. Wasn't he born in the summer? Listen, I'm not a biblical scholar, but there's like actual, they're like, he wouldn't have been born like that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nowhere near his birthday.
Again, if I'm going to root for a carpenter who died in his early 30s, I'm going for Karen, sweetie. So how about that? You like that material I worked out?
No.
Did you just come up with that?
No. Yeah. I've been waiting for 6 years.
Yeah. To tell that joke.
It's a little old.
I am so tired of you. I need a break.
Happy New Year.
It's a good thing this is our last episode of the year.
Godspeed.
When we're back, 2019.